Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more bore for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. With your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warming light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely crew, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's October the 3rd, 2013. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Golden dawn, golden dawn, golden dawn. And this week everybody in the movement has been jumping up and down and shitting snowballs about golden dawn. This is the usual manner in which we react to anything. We leap to our computer keyboards and we weep and wail and wring our hands and grind our teeth and howl that it's all just so unfair, which I'm sure absolutely terrifies the Greek government. Always bear in mind that except for the Northwest Front, the white nationalist movement in America has no real existence outside the internet. Okay, first off, it needs to be said right up front that these Golden Dawn guys aren't actually white. The ones that I have seen on the net in their black t-shirts standing around and mugging tough for the media mostly look like Mexicans. Greeks are a naturally olive-skinned people. They're not niggers, certainly, and obviously they don't want to become niggers, hence the Golden Dawn, but they're not completely white either. And I say this as someone whose broad-minded views on that kind of thing have gotten him in trouble in the past with the purists among us. I'll buck the purists, but only up to a certain point, and modern Greeks are pretty much beyond that point. Now, I've known some Greeks. They are not bad guys personally, and on an individual basis, I have a lot of time for them, but we need to accept that Agamemnon and the Trojan War was 4,000 years ago, and modern Greeks are not completely Aryan anymore. Now, Greece was occupied for many centuries by the Ottoman Empire, and lower-class Greeks are basically Turks. Racial Levantines, although a little more cultured than most, I will grant you. Greece is kind of like certain Latin American countries like Mexico and Ecuador and Paraguay. There is a tiny minority of white-ish people in their wealthy upper ruling class like Prince Philip. The upper classes are more or less white, mostly because their young men go to university in Europe, and they marry sluttish women from Europe, mostly French women, who, for some reason, are especially bad about selling themselves for money in some kind of backwater palace in Quito or Athens. Nigger dictators in Africa who want a white trophy wife for First Lady of Bungie Bungie usually can find some French whore for the purpose. Now, all of that having been said, like everyone else, the Greeks are being overrun with real third-world immigration, and they have the right to defend their land, which, unlike any other European resistance movement, the Golden Dawn has actually been doing to a certain extent, if only with fists and clubs. And now they have to choose whether or not they have the balls to graduate to the AK-47 and Semtex. Now, I wish the Golden Dawn only well, but let's be honest, guys, they don't really have anything to do with us, except in one aspect of their situation, which we do kind of need to pay heed to. Now, what has happened to the Golden Dawn is a clear and unmistakable warning as to why we can no longer waste our time in an attempt to use democracy to bring about change, when the entire purpose of democracy is to prevent change and make sure that the same people who have ruled the Western world for the past century keep on ruling it. The Golden Dawn did everything they were supposed to do. They played by the rules. They ran in elections. They waited patiently for years and years in the political wasteland for their turn to come and then their turn finally came. They actually started winning elections and getting people into the Greek parliament and cabinet. And the local ruling class simply outlawed them and arrested their leaders, which is what would happen if, through some fluke, we ever started winning elections in this country. The same thing the ruling class in Egypt did to the Muslim Brotherhood, and every place else they've actually won elections. The elections are simply overturned and the leaders arrested. Yeah, I know. David Duke. David Duke won a single term as a Louisiana state legislator in the early 1990s. He was frozen out of the governmental process for the entire 2 years of his term, and he was never allowed to sit on any legislative committees or handle any money. And if memory serves, he was never even allowed to make any speeches. On the rare occasions when he was allowed to speak, the other legislators got up and walked out. And by special order from the Speaker, the House Secretary did not record or transcribe Duke's words into the legislative record. He's down the memory hole. It's like he was never there. I remember at the time, after Duke's election, some local Republican honcho down there in Louisiana got up in front of the media cameras, and he was just totally in shock. And he had what is known in media circles as a Michael Kinsey moment, which is a moment when some politician accidentally blurts out the truth. Now, this guy was the chairman of the state GOP or something like that, and he said, and I quote more or less from memory, "I deeply apologize to the rest of America for electing this horrible, wicked man, David Duke, to public office in Louisiana. But what happened with David Duke was an accident. It will not be allowed to happen again." Nor was it. Now, does anyone seriously think that if we ever built up some kind of legal parliamentary movement and we were able to get a governor or a senator or a president elected, that successful white candidate would be then allowed to take office just because it's the law? No. The ruling class violates its own laws all the time. No, the Jews would run to the federal courts as fast as their bandy little legs could carry them, and they would get the election overturned or get an injunction preventing the newly elected candidate from acquiring any power. They would also probably find some grand jury to indict him, or the FBI would simply arrest him under the Patriot Act on the basis of fabricated audio tapes of the guy trying to hire a hitman like they did to Edgar Steele. Here in this country, we are going to have to adopt an entirely new method and approach to politics. A much older, much more European method. That is frankly the major problem that we have in this country, which is all these damned white Americans we have to work with who don't want politics, they want picnics. Americans have always regarded politics as kind of like football and basketball games and NASCAR. A spectator sport with campaign buttons and bumper stickers and thrills and spills and tailgating and french fries and beer in big paper tubs. Americans have never understood that politics is deadly serious, because while their political masters may have always been crooks and killers, they were at least white people like ourselves with whom we had something in common. Now we are being ruled more and more by black and brown and yellow third world savages. And our approach to politics is going to have to get third world, quick, as less and less is decided by elected officials, congressmen and whatnot, and that includes what might be called extra-parliamentary approaches to the problem of surviving in a third world one-party state under the Democrats. As for the Golden Dawn, if they lie down and take this from their government, then they don't deserve to rule Greece because, like us, they have become too timid and frightened and soft to be willing to make the necessary sacrifices. If they actually do decide to fight, then I wish them all the best. I mean that, but I say again, they really don't have anything to do with us. Okay, now, last week I asked for MP3 files from listeners, and I got one from the land down under, where the wallabies and the Vegemite sandwiches come from. This is Connor from Australia.
G'day, comrades. I'm Connor, and I'm from Australia. I am white, male, and proud of it. Many of my most vitriolic debates and rants have been against the institution of feminism. In fact, I consider it perhaps the worst plague the creeping chaos has unleashed upon our people. I nonetheless support what Harold said on September 26th, 2013. I think he was right to criticize those among us who called for our kinswomen to be excluded from RFN, or even silenced in general. And this is why. A white woman who awakens to the destructive nature of feminism and rejoins her kinsmen in the struggle has overcome the same ideological garbage as her menfolk and more. She faces not only the shame, alienation, and materialism with which white men are indoctrinated, but also a seductive and empowering sense of innate superiority. along with a comforting conflict model in which she is an eternally aggrieved victim of her own blood kinsmen. Yes, that's right, us white boys. We are meant to be engaged in a racist, patriarchal conspiracy where we support and respect each other based upon our possession of male genitalia and the colour of our skin, excluding her and her sisters of colour, and forever attempting to keep them down. This is our white male privilege, and boy, if such a thing existed, I'd sure love to benefit from it more. Only, I don't. None of us do. Because none of it is real. Before I get back to the point, I'd like to ramble a little on feminism. It helps to get to know the nature of the beast, before attempting to understand how it does what it does, why it is wrong, and how it relates to our movement and our womenfolk, and our need to encourage them back into the fold. In the grim fantasy world of feminists, a woman is both a victim and a victimizer, depending upon whether she feels she is winning the weird, psycho-political mind game that dominates an entire sphere of her life. She is not accountable for her failures. Indeed, the very idea that she fails at all is anathema to her reasoning most of the time, and when it must be acknowledged, external factors such as patriarchy and men are often faulted in her stead. Conversely, her successes are often attributed not merely to her own natural ability and willpower, but rather to feminist empowerment, enabling her to smash the patriarchy and therefore achieve material success. This is often projected onto other women, even ones who are less enthusiastic about feminism yet happen to be particularly strong or intelligent. The implication is that without feminism, a woman is nothing, and against feminism, a woman is a traitor to her sisters and womanhood in general, for without it, the patriarchy would crush her and prevent her from achieving anything at all. This is an oversimplification, but rest assured, feminism is not about equality. It is about something altogether more sinister when one breaches its shell of deceit. There's a nice little Freudian tidbit for any of you creepy burned-out lefty types listening, since I'm feeling generous. If any white women out there still consider themselves feminists, for a moment, please consider this. Feminism holds that of all the oppressed and broken groups throughout human history, the only one that never threw off its shackles and trampled its oppressors into the dust, the only group too pathetic and weak and useless and stupid to do so until the 1960s, was women. Against the tyranny of men. There can be no more vicious and degrading insult to women than that, and frankly, it makes my blood boil. Feminists hold that until they came along, women were too pathetic to shake off an oppression of such magnitude that it was common to almost all races and cultures across the planet, and barely afforded women the status of human beings. Women are not that pathetic, stupid, or hopeless. Not women in general, and most certainly not women of our proud and noble heritage. Feminists, on the other hand, are, and they project that hopelessness onto all womankind. Furthermore, they are wrong. Women have not always been oppressed throughout all of human history. There have been some shameful episodes in our history where women have not been afforded the respect they deserve. In my opinion, the city or empire state of Athens was among the worst. However, in many cases, women merely exercised their share of power differently, often using the superior physical capability and expendability of men to get their share of power, riches, and glory, while minimizing personal risk and keeping out of the spotlight. Women such as Queen Victoria, Queen Elizabeth I, and the piratess Grace O'Malley go so far as to shirk this within the Western Christian context, taking center stage in history. Whereas in our pagan past, women such as Queen Boadicea, Sigrid the Haughty, and Freydis Eriksdottir buck the feminist narrative by being bona fide badasses. Harold has talked about other examples too. Indeed, I encourage the rest of you to submit vignettes on women who break the stereotype, as I don't have time to start rattling off anecdotes here today. Feminism, if I were to describe it in one word, is hypocrisy. Like many liberal movements in Western society, it masks itself with pretty words. Equality, freedom, kindness. Under these words is something evil. Make no mistake, not every feminist is evil. Some are simply misguided. But when you have a movement that allows people to openly advocate the castration and or murder of the opposite gender, simply for being the opposite gender, I'd say there's a problem somewhere. Its hypocrisy is perhaps most evident in how it claims to deal with one of its favorite talking points, equal rights. It attempts to grant women these same equal rights as men, while demanding none or few of the same social responsibilities men once shouldered in order to balance those rights in saner times. Feminism frequently seeks to strip men's rights away as it does so, while demanding they continue to shoulder those social responsibilities to women and children, operating through convoluted systems of logic, ranging from weird abstraction to a narrative of vengeance for past oppression, in order to justify their quest for inequality in the name of equality. That quest is going pretty well, because you see, when a man immolates himself on court steps and leaves a letter, talking about how the courts won't let him see his children and treat him like a criminal, you know there is something kinda wrong. Feminism helped to bring this about. They lead people to believe that men are somehow less deserving of happiness, based upon terrible things that are supposed to have happened in the past, and which, according to feminists, are still happening in the present. Because you see, the day these things stop happening is the day feminism and feminists are no longer really needed. They lose their bugbear, and with it, their reason for doing what they do. Much like a nanny. When the kid grows up, suddenly, we don't need nanny anymore. Nanny doesn't have a place in the household. So what needs to happen? Kid needs to never grow up. That way, nanny will always have to be there to hold his hand and spank him when he's naughty. Without patriarchy, there can be no feminism. And therefore, in the feminist narrative, no matter how much they have to reach or how absurd it gets, even seeing patriarchy's influence on the popular Disney movie Mulan, which is a movie, may I add, about a young woman in ancient China who defies a patriarchal society and goes on to become a great warrior, even seeing patriarchy there, this has to happen. Otherwise, there's no need for feminism to stick around and fight it. Feminism brought us to this point, advocating for equality and freedom and kindness, when all they really want is the privilege of stomping on you if you're male and dictating to you if you're female. Though if you're white, straight, and female, you'd better watch out. There's a growing consensus that feminism is for white women, and naturally, that is seen as a very bad thing. This new ideological current is the beginning of what Harold described in his books, the abandonment of white women by feminism and the creeping chaos in general, and the beginning of their persecution as privileged by society on account of their skin colour. HAC's weird gift of prophecy at work again. Getting kinda creepy, Harold. White feminists are encouraged, often by screaming attacks from what I have seen in my observation of their discussions on the subject, to accept that they are not as oppressed as women of colour, but rather are oppressive in how they've handled the cause of feminism, and must accept abuse and degradation from women of colour whose rage against them is justified. They must check their privilege in order to prevent themselves from feeling wronged or outraged by these attacks. Instead, they must feel shame. Watching white feminists wail and protest while being shut down, insulted, and belittled by brainwashed idiots of their own race, and a tidal wave of coloured progressives who outnumber them 10-1 is cathartic, even if that is schadenfreude. Feminism is going to start spitting out a lot of seriously hurt and confused white women in the coming years, and groups like ours need to be ready to support and embrace them, not to tell them to shut up and get back in the kitchen, sneering, "I told you so." That doesn't help anyone. And having female voices on this show is a beacon of hope to those who reach the end of the line and need to believe there is another, better way. Such women are rare for now, but regardless of whether their numbers increase or otherwise, they will always be precious to our cause and worthy of admiration. Overcoming such seductive lies, brilliant propaganda, institutional terror, and elegant brainwashing is an achievement with little to match it. A lady who succeeds in doing so is worthy of our respect, even if she does nothing but stand with us in solidarity from that day forward. When she also dedicates her time to RFN submissions, and takes the fight to the foe at her kinsman's side in whatever way she can, we have considerably fewer legs to stand on when we suggest she shot her trap. Especially if she, like Olivia or Gretchen, has so many interesting and informative things to say. And when we ourselves, most of us conspicuously outside the homeland, have very little to say indeed, judging by the way we aren't often heard on RFN. The purely hypothetical and fictional Northwest American Republic from Harold's books would not be a country where women are relegated to the kitchen and portraits of families suggest they are comprised exclusively of menfolk who progenate via fungal spores. It would be a country that men and women build together. The two halves of the Aryan whole reunited at last on respectful, complementary terms. Feminism has taught us something most of us already knew. That women are wives and mothers, but are also valuable, creative, intelligent contributors to society. We won't be going back to the bad old days, insofar as they were ever half as bad as the modern narrative and interpretation of history would suggest. The enemy is not white women, nor is it white men. The enemy is feminism and the rest of the unholy mess that has been inflicted upon our folk. It turns beautiful, intelligent white women into unthinking, feel-brained, spoilt brats with an inferiority complex. My kinsmen, remember that when she destroyed your life on a whim, it was because she was sick, not because she was a woman. If that were truly the nature of women, then I doubt our species, much less our race, would have lasted this long. Blaming women in general for what she did is not the answer. Blaming what has been done to women most assuredly is. As is blaming the ones who did it. My kinswomen. The white men who have hurt you and abused you are just as sick and damaged by this society as the disgusting females, unworthy of the title of women, that many otherwise good men see when they look at you. You have nothing to be sorry for once you join us, for in doing so, you prove yourselves to us all. You have been horribly wronged by this society, as have we, and there can be no undoing what has been done in ignorance and madness. We were both spiritually sick, and now that we are on the path to recovery, there is no sense in beating ourselves up for our failings in the past. There can only be mutual atonement through words and deeds as we serve each other and our people together. If we are to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children, we must heal and grow strong. This is not something we can do alone. It is something we must do as one. We are not rivals or adversaries. If you join us, you are our comrade, and if any man or woman chooses not to afford you respect when you show it to them, then that is very much our problem, and we will face it together. That said, we must all remember just how much hurt and harm is out there, and how many men and women of our people have been very badly burned. That is not their fault, and they carry deep emotional scars from the experience that can make them hostile and prejudiced. Showing them a measure of patience is also important. Just because a man or woman is suspicious of the opposite sex at first does not make them evil or the enemy. It is when they are confronted by good men and good women, and get to know them, and still continue to revile them, that we have a problem on our hands, and their inner hurt begins showing signs of being goo-goo material. With that being said, I have very little else to add. So I'll end this before I send you all to sleep. Hail victory, comrades.
Right, first music break this week comes from Comrade Arlen Brand in England. He's one of our original songwriters and performers, for those of you who haven't heard any of his music before. And this one is called Makes Me Sick.
This is our land, Anglo-Saxon land. No more foreigners on the streets of England. The English people have had enough. No more mosques and community centres, bending over backwards for immigrants come. Politicians, you make me sick, selling out your people to get rich quick. Tony Blair is a case in point, he made 30 million whilst in charge of the joints. Slicing up England for immigrant homes, cut the green and pleasant land down to the bones. You won't stop cause you don't care, you just keep going till this country's laid bare. Politicians, you make me sick, selling out your people to get rich quick. Tony Blair is a case in point, he made 30 million whilst in charge of the joints. H.M.H. Weiner is a traitorous bitch. She signs every bill that falls into her mitts. Giving away the kingdom to the new world order. Our people face extinction but she don't give a shit. Politicians, you make me sick, selling out your people to get rich quick. Tony Blair is a case in point, he made 30 million whilst in charge of the joints. Our land, Anglo-Saxon land. This is our land, Anglo-Saxon land.
Thank you. Someone was asking, do I only do book reviews? No, I've done other types of commentaries from time to time, but I find that book reviews are really a fairly easy segue into various subjects, and I find that I get a lot of material that way from doing, I don't know whether you'd want to call them reviews or reports on various books. Some people have said that I'm not very entertaining, and that may very well be true. I would say that on this show, we're really not in the entertainment business. It's rather like an art gallery. You may go to an art gallery, and from time to time, they may have wine and cheese if they're having a show. But typically, an art gallery is not a bar. It's not a restaurant. They're really not in the food service business. They're not in the drinks business. And it's very much the same here. Occasionally, you may find entertainment here, but we're really not in the entertainment business. Now, if you feel you must have entertainment, if you feel that entertainment relieves stress, then you need to look for your entertainment in other places. Now, of course, I still recommend you listen to this show, but your entertainment, if that's what you need so badly, it really has to come from somewhere else. I'm somebody who would say, and I know a lot of people in this movement would disagree with me. I know there have been people on the show who have said this, that will say, for instance, you know, don't watch any television ever. What I would say is, if you need something to relieve stress, for example, I don't know, maybe that's a way some people relieve stress. And if it doesn't impede you in your migration or in saving money or in any of those things, if it doesn't impede you in helping the movement, then, you know, maybe occasional entertainment of some sort from somewhere, maybe that's not such a bad thing. But you can't necessarily rely on this show for entertainment. That's really not the point of this show. The point of this show is to promote Northwest migration. You know, when I think about Northwest migration and the Butler Plan, I realize that those things are really more than this show. They're more than Harold, they're more than me, they're more than this particular organization. And I see this show as important, certainly. And I'm willing to work very hard to produce MP3s for this show. I'm happy to do that. But I know that Northwest Migration is more than this show. I see this show as a means to an end and not as an end in itself. I was watching a YouTube video about Ian Stewart, and it talked about this conflict in Ian's organization, about how he wanted to make more records, but there were other people in the organization that wanted to take earnings and they wanted to do other things. And I asked myself whether Ian was right or wrong to feel that he wanted to focus only on records. I mean, a part of me is very happy that Ian Stewart did so many great songs, but another part of me thinks, well, he was a propagandist, yes, and he incidentally was a singer, but was the singing that important? He had a message to promote, but did that have to be through singing, or was the singing incidental? So I think all of us could get into this mindset where we get into an organization and just want to generate more organization, or we want to generate more entertainment, for example, if we're in a propaganda function. But I realize all these things are just means to an end, and therefore they don't necessarily have to be fantastic within themselves. I don't feel that I have to be an entertainer. In fact, I'm not even sure that I should be. I know that this show at one point veered off into a lot of entertainment, and I often would get very concerned about veering off into something that is largely entertainment. Because even though entertainment is fun, and I wouldn't say I'm against entertainment, I'm pragmatic about it. I know that sometimes people need a stress relief, but I know that I'm not in the entertainment business. I don't think anybody in this cause should see themselves as merely in the entertainment business. And if they do, then I think there's some problem there. Some problem with their conception of their purpose. I know there were some people who said they wanted more gossip, and I suppose that shows a lot of candor, but again, I think that gossip is something that we totally don't need, because I think that, if anything, I would say it has a negative effect on morale. You know, morale is something we should always watch, and I think anyone should watch that, whatever they're doing in their life, and if something helps their morale, in most cases, then we might say that that's positive, generally speaking. And if something harms morale, then I would say that's negative, and that's something we always need to watch. For example, if television harms someone's morale, or if it takes away from money they might put towards migration, then they need to cut that out of their lives. But on the other hand, if they find it bolsters them in some way, then maybe that's a good thing for them, as long as it's not draining their finances. But I think news, of course, is something different, and I think, you know, certainly news about the homeland or history of the movement is something entirely different, and I can see where that would be beneficial, as well as talking about scenery and climate. I think that's perfectly fine. Those were just my thoughts on all the discussion that we've been having about the show and about the organization in general, such as it is. I'm someone that thinks there's a need to be very watchful anytime we become obsessed with organization over purpose. Because I know there's a lot of organizations out there in the world that have lots of meetings, and they do their minutes and all of this, and the question becomes, what is the purpose of it? And there's a lot of organizations in the world, and I'm not talking just about in the movement, I'm talking about in general, where an organization takes on a life of its own, and it exists just to generate more organization. And that works really well if you want to have a social club. If people want to occupy their time with meetings and minutes and budgets and things like that, I suppose it's a fine thing. But we should always remember that in this movement, we're not really trying to generate organization, we're not really trying to generate entertainment necessarily, or even propaganda necessarily, because we have sort of a goal that is more than any of those things. So I think we need to always know that in our conception of how we're doing things. So, no, I don't just do only book reports or reviews. I do from time to time speak out on things, and if you listen to enough of these shows, I'm sure you'll find some examples. But no, I'm not primarily trying to be an entertainer. So that's what I have to say on those things. So thank you for listening and good evening.
Okay, I want to get into a subject now which I've addressed before on this show, but which I apparently need to go over again, probably in a little more detail than I have done before. Now, I had an email from a guy in Britain complaining once again about too much Fenian music. In other words, he was offended by my paying too much attention to his tribal enemies in what is probably the longest-lasting, still-active blood feud between two white tribes in Europe, with the possible exception of the Basques and the Spanish. I need to give you guys a lengthy explanation of the whole Irish thing and its applicability to our situation here in the Northwest. First off, I say again, for the umpteenth time, but please try and wrap your minds around it. Yes, I know the provisional IRA are crypto-communists, and the official IRA are old-line Stalinist-type communists. I know this because I lived there for 5 years, with a few brief breaks in London and the Isle of Man. But I could observe the Irish situation closely there as well. I am not some Boston Irish mook who gets drunk and sings the old songs in the pub. I lived in Ireland poor, like the locals did, in housing estates and bedsits. I might add that among other incidents, I was one of the first responders to the Baltic Exchange IRA bomb in April of 92, when three people were killed, and so when I write about this kind of thing in my Northwest novels, I'm not describing things I am personally unfamiliar with. While I did not become actively involved in the troubles, I did have a few encounters. I'm not going to go into the details here because, despite my occasional digressions, this is not the Harold Covington show, and its purpose is not for me to spend the whole show rambling on in long Grandpa Simpson stories about back in the day. I will say that on at least two occasions during my time in Ireland, one with the Presbyterian thugs and one with the Catholic thugs, my American passport most likely saved me from some unpleasant events. For various reasons, neither side wants the bad PR of messing with Americans, or at least that was the way it was back in the 80s. I don't know what things are like now. So, with that preamble, let me explain what all the so-called Fenian music is about. Now, you guys need to bear in mind that I have lived for some years in a society where the liberal left-wing democratic government and the establishment has lost the credible monopoly of armed force. That third leg of that revolutionary tripod thinking I keep rabbiting on and on about. I'll give you an example, as briefly as I can. A Southern Irish Protestant friend of mine over there, yes, there are a few left, was a serving sailor in the Irish Navy, such as it is, and he was based out of Cove, and he had a small flat in Cork City where he lived off post, as we'd call it. About 3 months before he was scheduled to get out of the Navy after his 7-year hitch, he made the mistake of publishing an article in a British nationalist magazine called Right Turn, I think it was called that. Anyway, he published it under his own name, and somehow the provost picked up on it and figured out who he was. Now, the first my friend heard of this was when two Irish special branch detectives rocked up on his doorstep and told him that their intelligence indicated that his name was being discussed in provost circles. Now, what you have to understand is that there was an official provo policy of not attacking serving members of the Irish military. In the 26 counties, it was one of those cases where neither side wanted what the other could dish out, which is an important aspect of the loss of that credible monopoly of armed force. When the government has to take into account on a daily basis and in their daily work at least the possibility that the wealthy people and the politicians and the muscle men who enforce the wealthy people and the politicians will might actually be held personally accountable for their behavior. Now believe me, that is a situation that the governing classes anywhere hate and which fills them with rage. The actual necessity to think about what they are doing and think about who they're going to be fucking over with their behavior today. And knowing that there are certain people they damned well better not fuck over. Because if they do, they're going to turn their ignition keys on their government Mercedes one morning and they're going to hear a very loud noise. I mean, what's the point of being in government at all if you can't just pick out anybody at will and torment and destroy them like a little boy pulling wings off flies? If you have to worry about the fly maybe giving you a poisonous sting, what's the fun in that? And what's the point in being a cop if you can't just arrest and beat and torture and humiliate and destroy anybody you want? Which is why most cops become cops in the first place, since it's one of their pathologies. Cops especially don't like having their power and their authority challenged. And in Ireland, it was by no means unknown for some guard or some RUC bully who had beaten and electroshocked the wrong guy or felt up the wrong guy's sister in a cell to hear a knock on the door one night and find a man in a ski mask with a gun on his doorstep. Irish police on both sides of the border couldn't just mindlessly obey orders. They couldn't do just whatever the computer told them to do and go home at night and enjoy a big fat paycheck like our American muscle men do. They had to actually think about what they were doing and weigh the consequences. Okay, I know I'm doing it again, I'm rambling way off the point, but the point I'm trying to make here is that in Ireland, at that time, the government's decision on anything was never really final. There was a court of appeal in the back rooms of certain pubs and in certain houses that kept the window shades drawn, and everybody in the community knew who and where. If you didn't like the way some judge or solicitor or bureaucrat had fucked you over, you'd go and see your local Sinn Féin town councillor and ask him to help. And if he decided to get involved, the judge or the guard or the bureaucrat usually got the message. But if not, and the provost decided it was worth intervening. Your case got passed on to the local commandant, and the asshole who messed with you or your family or violated your rights under color of law would end up with busted kneecaps, or worse. And you know something? That system works. Personal accountability in government works. There is nothing like the threat of a good clubbing to the ground or a bullet in the kneecap to keep government honest and responsive to the people. Now, don't get me wrong, government in Ireland wasn't perfect. It was bureaucratic and slow and sometimes mildly corrupt. Well, mildly by American standards, anyway. But it was nothing at all like what we have in this country, and it was very personal. By and large, if you had a problem, you could sit down with your local TD or whoever was involved, and you could work it out. Because that government guy never knew who might be able to call on the services of the men in the ski masks. Right, back to my friend in the Irish Navy, finally. The two cops told him, you need to get your ass back on base and put your uniform on, and from now on you don't take it off. You sleep in your uniform, and you stay on base except when you're at sea or on official business. Now, if you don't, we cannot protect you. And when you get out of the service, you need to buy a one-way ticket to the UK, and don't come back for 40 years, which is basically what my friend did. Last time I heard from him, he was in London. I don't know, but it could be he's never been back to Ireland since. Now that, my friends, is power. Power exercised against our own kind by commie hoodlums, true, but power nonetheless. Power exercised without the permission of the Jews and some Jew-run regime. You remember power, don't you? It's that thing that we don't have, because we are too weak and timid and frightened of what the Muslimmen might do to hurt us. The provos were and are able to exercise that power over my friend's life, because while they had a healthy respect for the Irish government's ability to do them harm if push ever came to shove, they did not allow their fear to stand in the way of what they believed to be their duty. The day that we have white men like that again in America, we'll have power again. Now, that's the reason that I play so much Irish music and make apparently pro-IRA conversation on here sometimes. It's a mindset American white boys need to adopt if there's ever going to be any hope and if we're ever to have men like Shane Ryan and Cody Brock and Zach Hatfield and Red Morehouse in real life. We have to put aside our ideological reservations about the provos and look at them solely as white males who actually stole some power over their country and their lives back from a liberal democratic government. White males who were outsiders and who in the normal course of things would have been marginalized and treated with nothing but abuse and contempt all their lives, but who yet forced one of the major second-string liberal democracies to take them into account, and who finally managed to shoot their way to a seat at the table because in Britain the accountants finally surrendered. Now granted, it took them 30 years to do it, and granted, the so-called Good Friday Agreement was a sellout, but that's because the IRA leadership grew old and sick and tired and corrupt with all that waiting and all those years in prison cells and finally became willing to sell their birthright for a mess of pottage. I think Jerry Adams is now drawing something like 5 separate government salaries, plus what he makes from speaking tours and book sales and whatnot. I guess you could call them Irish David Dukes and Eric Glebes. But the problem of corrupt leadership is something else to talk about, if we ever decide that we want to talk about it, which so far we don't. Now, there is another reason why I play so much quote-unquote Fenian music on here, and that is that Irish rebel songs happen to be some of the most magnificent instrumental and vocal folk music in the Western world. And they display a psychology and a mindset and introduce Americans to a cultural tradition of resistance that we need to start assimilating. Yes, I have played Loyalist music on here as well, notably in July around the time of the Glorious 12th, but guys, not going to put this politely. The simple fact is that you just don't sing as well as the Fenians do. I have a lot of sympathy for the Protestant people of the North, and I know that you have been victimized for 40 years now by various attempts to murder you and drive you off your own land. I get it. But facts are facts. You may be morally in the right as far as the 6 counties go, and actually I happen to think you are, but they've got all the best songs. Nonetheless, just to try and demonstrate once again that I do know that there are 2 sides to the story, here's another UVF song for you. I'm sorry, I don't know the group.
said a father to his son. Oh, my boy, the time has come. Our country, it is calling unto thee. For those rebels once again, to unite us is their aim. And together we must stand to keep her free. Remember our fathers brave and bold, as they fought for Ulster's cause in far off lands. For my father said to me, I must join the YCV with a rifle or a pistol in my hand. From Belfast to Armagh, Kilray to Old Cross Guard, from Ballymena to Old Omagh, with our standards flying high, like it was in days gone by, we will rally round the flag for liberty. Remember our fathers brave and bold, as they fought for Ulster's cause in far off lands. For my father said to me, I must join the YCV with a rifle or a pistol in my hand. So come on, ye volunteers, let us fight and never fear, just like our fathers did so long ago. So when I'm 16 years of age, in the volunteers I'll engage, like our fathers did so many years ago. Remember our fathers brave and bold, as they fought for Ulster's cause in far off lands. For my father said to me, I must join the YCV with a rifle or a pistol in my hand. With a rifle or a pistol in my hand.
Greetings from Seattle, comrades. Andy Donner here. Today I think it best to cover some of the responses Mr. Covington got to his query on the party website regarding Radio Free Northwest. As it happens, this will segue nicely into a talk I have to give before I get to White Character Step 2, since I don't think, based on the feedback the party is getting, that I'm making certain things as clear as I need to. Firstly, I see someone did a little bit of religious trolling right off the bat. Don't think we didn't catch you labeling perfectly good people as race traitors because you don't like their faith. Secondly, it seems like a very large portion of the listeners are actually getting the concept of the Northwest Imperative, even if they're not actually doing anything about it. And no, I'm not saying this because they agree with everything the party does. They don't. I bring this up to contrast it with the people who aren't getting it. A very large portion of the respondents asked us for the right way to do the wrong thing. Spoiler alert, it doesn't exist. While there were some reasonable requests for movement information and other types of content, not all of them were appropriate or related to what we're here for. In case some of you forgot, we're here to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children by creating an all-white country where our race's enemies don't have the ability to harm us. There is not another option available to us at this point, so it must be everyone's number one priority. We have plenty of white nationalist movement gossip out there, and we seem to have a bottomless pit, and it is a pit, of survivalist, off-the-grid, militia material for you to feast on while you're busy ignoring the Northwest Imperative. In particular, we seem to have quite a few requests which pander to people not interested in accepting their responsibility to help the party implement the Butler Plan. Okay, fine, not all of you are like this, but it's a consistent pattern and it's got to be called out every opportunity we get. These requests usually come in the form of questions on advice and information about everything you should do except the one thing which might save our race from our impending extinction. This isn't something that happened only on the blog comments in question, so don't think anyone in particular is being called out. And what's more important is that they are almost always accompanied by the phrase stand and fight or remarks alluding to fighting, combat, or a war of some sort. This is entirely inaccurate. I'm frequently bombarded with commentary insisting the Northwest Front is a runaway operation, whereas those I'm talking to are standing strong on the front lines. Front lines of what, I always wonder. About half the time this happens, I'm told the Northwest Front isn't being pragmatic, realistic, or down-to-earth. It's actually the other way around. The party is working on the solution, and everyone else is pretending. What battle is being fought and where? What is the strategy? What is the objective? How are you to tell you've won or lost? You'll notice the party doesn't describe what we're doing as a fight, because we have the integrity not to pretend in front of the whole world. This lack of intestinal fortitude on others' part is something I'm going to address later today, but first, I'd like to talk to those among us who seem to get it on some level. Quite a few of you ask knowledge-based questions, which are quite all right, even if they're not related to the party's main concern. For things like that, it's best to go to books or people who actually do what you need to know about. Quite a few of you have perfectly understandable interests in pretty important things. The trouble is that some of the skills you want can't be acquired by listening to a podcast. In any case, you're all better off focusing on party efforts since that's what matters most. As always, it seems like we've got a lot of people looking for anything else to do when more important things need done. And I think I know why. One of the criticisms I personally receive from a few different angles is that I'm abstruse. I have to take that seriously to a certain degree, but it's also a good idea to remember that the party, as part of its space repetition campaign, deals with a marked refusal to understand from other white people. It's true that I sometimes gloss over certain subjects or have certain expectations of the listeners, but that's for a very good reason. If I go into too much detail or spell things out too clearly, many of my Radio Free Northwest submissions would run the risk of genuinely insulting people. It's better if I leave some blanks for you all to fill in if you're willing. A very large part of the reasoning which led me to follow the Northwest Imperative consisted of deciding what about myself needed to change, and that's a very touchy subject. Aside from introspection, this takes honesty, even when that honesty leads to a painful, yet clear, self-examination and unflattering assessment. You'll note this is step two of my white character recovery process. If one of you is looking to correct your character, you're going to have to willingly and earnestly engage in genuinely unpleasant self-criticism. I regularly end up in conversations of various sorts with people purporting to be white nationalists, and very frequently they start in on a manner resembling the statement, "White people need to stop being so selfish and serve our race." This is entirely true, regardless of who says it, but I end up in another tiff, without even being aggressive, when I responded to one of these a while back. And no, once again, I'm not calling this person out, since she's one of many to react this way. Whenever I see something like this, I always respond and plug the Butler Plan. After all, if people really think that way, they ought to be quite happy when introduced to the only workable plan to save our race. Things hardly ever pan out that way. But why? In one particular case, I was told not to judge people who can't participate in the Northwest Imperative, even if they really can. What's with the hypocrisy here? These people always start off by judging others who don't act in accordance with the pro-white policy. And the only pro-white policy in existence is the Northwest Imperative. Shouldn't they understand that they want the latitude to make remarks critical of others without being subjected to their own standards? This is the phenomenon I periodically discuss where it seems the people who ought to help the party think their personal lives are too important to be interrupted while they harangue the rest of us to do what they won't. Here's why this happens. They're not the people they pretend to be. And what's worse, neither are you. You're not the person you pretend to be, and this pretending is the root of your character problem. The vast majority of white nationalists, at least in America, are still of the opinion we as a movement can't give up on America. Those who vocally oppose the party on this point don't measure up to the task they demand others perform in their stead. Let's talk about what it really took to wrest the colonies from Britain. The signatories of the Declaration of Independence made sacrifices in their day far beyond what is required of you to do your racial duty in your day. Perhaps the best example is Abraham Clark, who refused to switch sides in the war when the lives of his two sons, who were officers in the army, were threatened by their English captors. Thomas Nelson commanded the Virginia military during the war. He fired cannon on his own mansion because General Cornwallis was headquartered there. When the war was over, a peacetime Congress failed to honor his financial commitment to the Revolution, and his estates were forfeited to his debtors. He died poor at the age of 50. Many others, their wives, and their children were captured and brutally tortured in ways I won't go into on this program. Nearly all of these people saw, at the very least, all their worldly possessions burned by the occupying powers. Quite a few of you refused to exert the effort to take away a colonial territory in the Pacific Northwest, but for some strange reason you claim to be the spiritual successors of the American revolutionaries. We all know a political solution a la Golden Dawn doesn't exist. After all, look what happened to Golden Dawn. We can't vote our problems away, and there's nobody coming to save you this time. Now that's all okay, because we have a single remaining available option. Here's where all this breaks down. None of you are the people you pretend to be. You're not a great American. You're not a racial giant for trying to support the U.S. Constitution. Most of you talk like you're some sort of great patriot, the likes of those who actually fought the war to create this country, yet you can't even conceive of putting forth the minimal effort and sacrifice to come here and help the party do the things you say you want for your race. I don't have a more plain way of putting this. You're the worst character problem you have. The only person you're fooling with your not-really-patriotic American pseudo-nationalist bravado is yourself. If you were the person you pretend to be, you wouldn't need to beg other people to do the things you aren't willing to, while constructing a fantasy wherein you have the moral high ground required to justify your absurd and contradictory behavior. If you're going to improve your own character, you have to accept that it needs improving. If you're going to do white character step two, which is to figure out what about you needs to change, you first have to at least grasp that something isn't right with yourself. More than anything else, this is going to bring you face to face with your faults in a very similar way to what I just did for patriotards. Look, guys, it's easier for everyone if you're honest enough to do this for yourself, since that way the party doesn't have to spend time insulting you. Yeah, that's hard, because you have to stop deliberately refusing to understand what we're talking about, perhaps for the first time in your life. What can I say? This is just the way things are, even if you don't care for them one bit. Hail victory, comrades.
Okay, what with all the added commentary this week, I'm running long already. Just to refresh your memory, the maximum length of these Radio Free Northwest podcasts is 1 hour and 20 minutes, because that's the maximum you can record onto a commercial CD. But I normally like to keep it as close to an hour as possible, because longer than that, and I generally start losing the short American attention span. It's like dealing with so many 9-year-olds on a sugar rush, and God knows it's hard enough to keep them sitting still in one place and listening for an hour, but I'm going to have to go over a little this week. Now, some housekeeping comments about the show itself based on the feedback we've gotten over the past 2 weeks. As narcissistic as this sounds, there does seem to be a general view that you seem to want more HAC, which is flattering, but I still want and solicit your contributions to the show in the form of MP3 files with this proviso. Guys, could you try to keep it to within 5 to 8 minutes max? Otherwise, I may have to trim your contribution, which gets everybody all pissed off at me because Harold is being a mad tyrant again and censoring you. Now, that's one of my two modes, by the way. Either Harold is weak and dithering and indecisive because I won't do something you want me to do and won't do yourself, or I won't take your side in some spat that you're having with some other white person who claims to believe as we do. Or else, on the other hand, I'm a power-mad tyrant because I am not letting you post various kinds of inappropriate and disruptive material on websites and Yahoo groups and whatnot that I control. Now, do you guys really wonder why I keep hoping for that national organizer to descend from the clouds? I don't mind dealing with organizing and people if they're actually making some good faith attempt to do it, or do some of it. But I would really rather not spend the remaining years of my life with an apple or a sugar cube in my hand in a constant attempt to coax all you timid woodland creatures out from behind the shelter of your computer monitors for just long enough to eat out of my hand before you hear a noise and become frightened and scuttle back into the undergrowth of the internet and disappear, which is kind of the way it's been going for some years. And I'm damn sure way too old to go back to junior high school. Okay, quick third music break, and once again, the guy who sent this to me did not include the name of the group. So, when you guys are sending me music clips, could you please make sure that you let me know who's doing the singing and playing? Now, one of the things you said in my little survey question is you wanted more comedy, so how's this? It's called Obamaville.
Sipping on free cheese, laying in a cool breeze, waiting for my food stamps to come in. Talking on my free phone, in the work zone, living this easy could be a sin. Wasting away again in Obamaville, spending tax money from the government's vault. Some people claim that it's George Bush to blame, but I know it's Obama's fault. For welfare, I give free health care. Lost my job with nothing to do. Feel like a real king. I owe it to the left wing. How I got here, I haven't a clue. Wasted away again in Obamaville, spending tax money from the government's vault. Some people claim that it's George Bush to blame, but I know it's Obama's fault. Thank you.
I guess I'll let it run a bit long this week because I still have some things I want to go over. For example, to the guy in Maryland, I have not forgotten that you asked me for a big long spiel on Adolf Hitler's economic policies. I just wasn't able to get around to it this week because of the time constraints. Just to keep you guys apprised of what's going on, I have one minor writing and mailing project which I need to get done over the next couple of days after I get this podcast uploaded. And then, if I can get the weekend free, I will try to put out an extended short cast or maybe even a bonus episode of Radio Free Northwest itself on Sunday or maybe Monday, talking about some of the things that I didn't have time to get into in this episode because I'm falling a little behind on things that I need to talk to you guys about. Now, one of those things is that I want to have a series of commentaries on this show about the draft constitution of the Northwest American Republic, the document which will, in some finalized form or other, replace the rule of the United States within the Northwest homeland, whenever and however we decide that it's time to graduate from junior high school and start taking all this seriously. Now, we need to start showcasing the things that make the Northwest Front better than the rest, and the things that make us fit to secure the existence of our people and the future for white children. One of those things is our Constitution. And by the by, this is not an invitation to rewrite the Constitution to include everybody's eccentricities. So please don't send in demands that we insert any hobby horses into the document. Not happening. Now, that 2006 draft was the result of the effort of a for-real constitutional committee of about 36 men, including most of the order men who were alive at the time, like David Lane and Bruce Pierce and David Tate. So it's locked down, and we are not going to criminalize tiddlywinks or order everybody to wear their underwear on the outside of their clothes or anything like that. I would like serious comments and questions on the existing document, because that's the one we're going to start with at the Constitutional Convention. Now, the time for changes and rewriting will come when the real-life Freedom Sons begins and we're all sitting in that statehouse in Olympia or Salem with weapons in our hands, and we have convened that Constitutional Convention to decide for real how we want to live our lives. Beyond that, I have some serious projects that have to be done by the end of the year, one of which I can't talk about at all on here, but one of which I can. I'm going to be redoing, expanding, and updating the party manual, the White Book, and I want to have the fifth edition out by the end of the year. This needs to be done every few years anyway, and the fourth edition dates from October 2011, which is 2 years ago, so it's about time. Now, what I would like for you to do is two things. I want you to send me any comments or questions you have on the draft Constitution of the Republic so that I can deal with them either next week or possibly in this bonus episode on Sunday if I can get one up. There is a copy of the Constitution in the rear of the 4th edition White Book and another on the website at northwestfront.org, so everyone should have read it. So that's the first thing. Second thing, anything that you believe needs to be in the new White Book, the new party manual, I want you to lay it on me. Now, one of the big complaints I have had about this manual is, well, Harold, that's all very nice, but you're not specific enough. You don't give us any details, Harold. You don't give us any meat on the bones. In other words, I don't hold your hand and walk you through it. Okay, fine. This time around, we're going to expand the White Book to the point where I will have held your hand and walked you through it all as to exactly what I expect you to do. None of which will do any good because the overwhelming majority of you are going to get that White Book, either buy it or ask me for a copy on PDF or something. Most likely you'll get the actual book and then you will read it and you'll probably like it and you'll hide it away in your drawer or in that cardboard box at the bottom of your closet where you keep all your racist stuff so the little woman doesn't find it. I understand that's what's going to happen to the vast majority of these new white books. Okay, fine, I get it. Look, I've been doing this 40 years, guys. But I tell you what you won't be able to do. You will not be able to say, well, it's all Harold's fault. He's not specific enough. He's not a leader. Actually, I would like to be a leader. You know, here I am, guys. I'm telling you what I need you to do in order to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. I will keep on telling you what you need to do in order to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. In point of fact, guys, I am leading. It's you who need to start following. Anyway, our time is up, so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front. Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98194, or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sarsha Andaban. Freedom.